Good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me on the program.
Yeah, our absolute pleasure to get you back on. Now, looking at this current situation, perhaps could you explain to us what exactly were the factors that have led up to this crisis? What were some of the tensions that are now emerging?
Well, look, you know, it's contested. It's a contested narrative, I must admit. But essentially, the Rohingya people are they're in Rakhine State, which is on the northwestern coast of Myanmar. They've been there for generations. There is a view that they are people who were brought in during the time of the British Empire to be labourers from Bengal, and hence the push by some to call them Bangladeshis or Bengalis rather than Rohingya. But this is a Muslim group in a primarily Buddhist country, and it's one that has been essentially denied the rights of citizenship within Myanmar. And they have been marginalised. They have been essentially, you know, they've lacked government support in many ways, and they have been subject to marginalisation and abuse. Argue is certainly within Myanmar. There's a strong argument made by a Burman nationalist that this is actually because of them. This is their doing. This is because they're basically untrustworthy Muslims who have been taking advantage of the good Buddhist people, and so there's enormous ill will within the Burman Buddhist community of Myanmar towards the Rohingya people in Rakhine State. Now, that has been fermented by a Buddhist nationalist priests, monks, I should say, who have been operating, fermenting really quite violent language and actions towards Muslims. There is a sense that this is in response to Muslim perfidy, Muslim misdeeds. So, you know, it depends on who you ask as to how this originated. The bottom line is there is enormous ill will between the majority Burman Buddhist population and the minority Muslim Rohingya. And as it happens, that Rohingya population has over time become increasingly radicalized. They have been known to have attacked outposts, security outposts. They've been accused of excesses, and that has, according to the Burmese, the Myanmar people, has generated a very strong reaction against them. And to the point where, following reported terrorist attacks recently, the Burmese authorities, the Tatmadaw, the military, what's called the Tatmadaw, has basically gone out attacking Rohingya groups and in a way that is perhaps not as discriminating as you and I would like to think would be appropriate. So in other words, while there is a recognition that there are some hardline elements amongst the Rohingya, the government's forces, the Tatmadaw, the military and the police have acted with a degree of brutality and fierceness that belies the extent to which the threat existed. And this speaks to an issue of what appears in the Burmese rhetoric, in the narrative in Myanmar, that the Rohingya aren't just not nice, but they're an existential threat. That there is a sense in the hardline narrative that the Rohingya are the thin edge of the wedge, that you let them stay, give them rights, they will populate, they'll breed like crazy, and they'll take over the place. Now, it's extreme, it's an extreme view, it's a reductionist view, but it is what is the case at the moment. So, Aung San Suu Kyi, the great Nobel laureate, who has won office in the parliament of Myanmar, the Hlutol, she has, as her electorate, a strongly Burman Buddhist constituency. And her electorate essentially cares nothing for the Rohingya people. So she, from her political base, has no sympathy for them And she, in her reading of the Burmese politics, sees there's nothing in it for her in supporting or seeking to be soft towards the Rohingya. There's been quite a strong reaction to Aung San Suu Kyi's denunciations of the Rohingya. There's a view, some are saying her Nobel Peace Prize should be taken away, and some are saying her language is so outrageous that, she needs to be put down, rhetorically at least, for her stand. And there is some merit to this, but I think what we fail to do is put ourselves in the shoes of these people on both sides. So my point is that there is an enormous amount of tension. It is undoubtedly linked to a degree of Burmese xenophobia, but it is also linked to a reaction and an outreach of violence from Rohingya people. Which came first? That's a million-dollar question. There are pundits who would argue that this is simply Burmese or Myanmar xenophobia and anti-Islam extremist behaviour at work, and that's just all there is to it, and that the Rohingya are reacting as an oppressed minority inside Myanmar. And there is some merit to that argument. There are many minorities inside Myanmar that have suffered at the wrath of the Tatmadaw, the Burmese military. The bottom line is, though, today we have thousands upon thousands of Rohingya, what now the Burmese authorities are calling Bengalis. They don't want to recognise them even as having their own identity as Rohingya inside Myanmar. And they're being basically chased out and they're fleeing to Bangladesh. So we have emerging a humanitarian crisis of major proportions. So this isn't just a standard humanitarian crisis. What it is potentially the beginning of a fanning of an awful set of flames that could spread across the whole of maritime Southeast Asia.
Mm.
Because there is a large reaction inside, particularly Indonesia and Malaysia, viscerally angry at how the Burmese authorities, the Myanmar government, has been responding to the Rohingya people. They are so angry that the Burmese government, essentially of Myanmar, is repressing the Muslim minority. So it's actually tearing apart at ASEAN, and it is also helping to foment perhaps the next generation of extremists across Southeast Asia.
Mm.
Because we know that the Rohingya have been a big part of the unregulated people movement across the maritime space, across Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia. We have quite a lot of them detained in Manus Island and Nauru. So this is not just a problem for Bangladesh or Myanmar. This is a problem for the neighbourhood, and this is something that I believe Australia needs to now stand up and respond to. Akin to the way we did following the end of the Cold War, and when the then Foreign Minister Gareth Evans and General John Sanderson stood up the UN Transitional Authority in Cambodia to help bring Cambodia out of the era of Pol Pot.
Well, just as that sort of final thought there, John, as you mentioned there, the possibility of taking away a Nobel Prize from Myanmar's leader there is something that occurs to me as maybe a slap on the wrist, certainly a vast symbolic move. But when we talk about a people being faced as an existential threat to the countrymen that are now sort of taking it out on them, can Australia, what can other countries actually do to turn that around? An existential threat. I mean, we've seen this situation unfortunately unfold previously. Rwanda, as I mentioned earlier, that is just a horrible situation the world would certainly rather not see again. So what can other nations actually do to intervene?
Well, they can do quite a lot, actually. And I think collective action has the potential to change the dynamics entirely. This is the World Food Programme. A number of international non-government organisations and UN bodies are involved in providing assistance along the Bangladeshi border. There's much more that needs to be done. But concerted action, with perhaps Australia playing a leading role, roping in support or drawing in support from perhaps Indonesia, perhaps Thailand, perhaps even Myanmar, Malaysia, sorry, could actually perhaps help persuade Myanmar to back down from its extremist actions and to make some concessions towards people who have been living inside what was Burma, now Myanmar, for generations, and recognise them as having some rights that they've been denied so far. Now, that's not easy, as you say, action was required in Rwanda. We waited too long. My sense is Australia is in a position to act constructively and proactively now to help diffuse a crisis that could actually become a much greater crisis should the Rohingya diaspora become a radicalized one and foment even more violence across maritime Southeast Asia and down to Australia. These are longer term. These are big issues, and we need to be acting strongly and quickly to ensure that it doesn't get any worse and that perhaps we can wind it back.
Well, that seems like an excellent space to leave it. Obviously, one to keep our eyes on. John, really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks for having me on the program, Sean.